Blog Talk Radio.
Now it's time for some mind, body, and soul food with host Tanya Parker.
I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Yeah, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Well, you can feed my body, but you really gotta feed my head.
You know I'm hungry. Well, hello, hello, and welcome to Mind, Body, and Soul Food. I am your host, Tanya Parker, here to dish up some deliciously delectable consciousness-raising creations for your mind, body, and soul. First of all, we never can go forward without pausing to say thank you to the wonderful Gay Adegbolola, who brought us in with her Hungry Woman Blues, and you know we have the cure for that, as well as the Hungry Man Blues on this show, where on first and second Sundays at 6, we serve up a big dish on natural and holistic healing to feed your mind, body, and soul. Before we get started into our juicy show, I want to share with you a little bit about myself. Spirit has called me to work within my practice ministry, Mind, Body, and Spirit Works, to facilitate expression of one's highest self through divinely inspired and assisted holistic healing, teaching, coaching, and writing services. And I've been offering just so many wonderful, delicious services at my healing table over the past couple of decades, and I absolutely am thrilled to be able to offer mind, body, and soul food for the past 4.5 years, and it has provided an opportunity each month to feed our listeners with mind, body, and soul nourishing information as we give voice to the vision of really gifted holistic healers and light workers. And I'm always in appreciation for those of you who listen and support the show. Thank you to those who tuned in last week. We had our first highlights show, and we highlighted 2010 to 2014, and it was really wonderful to walk down memory lane and hear clips from a special show from each year. So if you missed that show or any of the other shows we've had in the past 4.5 years, most definitely check them out on demand. So tonight, I am so thrilled to introduce a guest from our North American friend country, Canada. So this guest has written an amazing book called All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. Say that fast 5 times, I dare you. So this book is ultra delicious. The title truly lives up to its name. And I have to say, I feel so inspired to do better as a card-carrying tree hugger now that I have what I call my eco-Bible to further guide me. So without further ado, let's give a warm mind, body, and soul food welcome to author Madeline Somerville.
Hello,
good evening, Madeline.
Hi.
Hi. Now, is it evening for you? Or is it just afternoon?
It's 4, so we're sort of slipping into evening. It's getting dark already.
Okay, so you're 2 hours behind us here on the East Coast. All
mm-hmm.
right. Well, if you could share with the listeners who you are and what do you serve at your healing table?
Well, I sort of came about this in a roundabout way. I don't really have any background in formal eco-friendly science or anything like that. My background is actually in sociology, and at the time that I came up with this book, I was working at an outreach center with at-risk teens, and it seems like sort of an odd amalgamation, but I was finding a way to inject my hippie sensibilities into my work with the teens. I ran a gardening program with them and sort of focused on sustainable and healthy lives with them. And my sociology background, I think, influenced how I approach eco-friendly living. I was very, very passionate about it, but sort of disheartened by the approach that a lot of people were taking and how it seemed to be so overwhelming and cumbersome. So I wanted to come at it with a bit of a lighter approach.
Mm. Well, it's funny you say this because we have a lot in common. I was a sociology major as well, and for, I guess, 4.5 years, I ran a program for teens and did a lot of work with them. And I have to tell you, I really wish I was more conscious during that time and knew some of the information that you've shared in your book, because I would most definitely have passed that on to the teens that I worked with back in the late 90s and early 2000.
Oh, yeah. They're so approachable and they're so ready to have that information.
Mhm. Mhm. Now, it sounds like your canine friend is making himself known. No worries, no worries. Well, we talked about your baby is in the basement. My dog is in the basement. We knew that
here.
one of the babies or furred friends would let themselves be known, so it's all good, because
yeah.
Your dog has been an inspiration as well, because I can't wait to get into that part of the book, because I am going to take some of your wonderful advice, because you left no stone unturned with this book. You say that your book is eco-friendly, and people will actually want to read it. I know a lot of people shut down sometimes when it comes to, green stuff and sustainability, and they just don't even like those words and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, why is it that you think people will actually want to read your book?
Well, this was where I wanted to incorporate this new approach, because I had read, as I got more interested in green living, I, of course, started reading. I'm passionate about reading, so that was my first step. And there's some incredible, incredible books out there that give hugely detailed explanations of why you should be going green and, you know, the damage that we're doing to the planet and all of this information, which is very worthwhile and very useful and relevant. But it was also really depressing. I would come out of those books feeling like, what effect am I possibly going to have by changing to, you know, a sugar scrub instead of one that I buy, or recycling my cans? Like, what effect am I possibly going to have when I'm reading about giant floating oceans of plastic the size of Texas? Like, it just seemed like in explaining the problem and the reason why we had to change our behavior, it was so overwhelming. So I kind of decided that I would just skip that part, and it's not to diminish it, and it's not to pretend that it's not there, but what I wanted to do was just say, we don't need to single-handedly solve global warming. We're not going to, you know, one person can't do that, and that's not the goal, but what I wanted to do was just show people that it could be really fun, and it could be simple, and it didn't have to be expensive or complicated, but it was something that I found I was so enthusiastic about, and so I was really hopeful that other people would find that as well.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to say that I have been enthusiastic, but never to the degree that I have been since reading this book. And
oh, I'm so
I think
glad.
Part of it is, yeah, you know, Madeline, I have to tell you, you are so funny. Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to tell my husband who said that, because sometimes I just have blank stares.
Yes, you can tell him. In fact, you know, you can, when the show is over, you can go back on demand and keep playing this little spot over and over again. All right, it's at, let's see, we're like 9.5 minutes into the show, so keep playing that portion.
Truth,
because
right,
you really are. I had so many laugh out loud moments in this book. And that's just, you know, it's not expected when it comes to a book with this type of topic. So I love the humor. Thank you very much for it. Did you ever have any worries that, you know, taking this lighthearted tone diminishes the gravity of the situation?
That was a concern. Like, sort of had, you know, you worry so much before your book comes out. It's like before birthing a child. You're so concerned about releasing this thing that's so beloved to you into the world and wondering about what kind of reaction it's going to have. And what I was hoping, I mean, I was imagining, you know, these diehard environmentalists chasing me down the street with pitchforks because I was, like, poking fun at, you know, these sort of snobby environmentalists. But my goal was not to diminish it, but to present it in a light that was really, that would motivate people. And I don't think guilt motivates people. And so I wanted to sort of acknowledge, I think most educated and aware people are cognizant of the fact that our society is undergoing these huge changes and that we do need to make significant changes. And so I wanted to kind of just say, okay, we know this, what can we do? And what can we do to make it enjoyable so that it's not just one more thing on our list, right?
Very true. Well, can you explain to our listeners the meaning behind the title, All You Need Is Less?
Well, that is the basis of the book, and that was an approach that came out of this idea that eco-friendly living was being sold as something that you bought rather than what you did. And that was really bugging me because it was seeming like it was something that you could only do if you had tons of time or tons of money or both. And for me, eco-friendly living isn't about buying expensive glass containers and buying upcycled clothing and buying the latest eco-friendly whatever. For me, eco-friendly living was often more simple and less expensive than the alternative. So I wanted to really focus on that so that it didn't seem like eco-friendly living was a luxury, that it was, you know, just for people who had the ability to spend lots of time and money on it, because I didn't find that to be the case. And then I also wanted to highlight the fact that even if you had no desire to do any of the things I mentioned, like even if, you know, somebody just randomly picked up this book and thought to themselves, I'm not going to be making my own lotion or washing my hair in baking soda, like this is not for me. Even if they didn't want to do any of that, I wanted to highlight the fact that simply by reducing your consumption, you can have a huge impact on the environment, a huge positive impact. And that was really important for me because that's just one simple step that we can all take that takes very little effort. Like it takes less effort than doing something because you're not doing it, right? You're choosing not to consume. And I just wanted to really highlight that and focus on the fact that just by reducing, you had the opportunity to have a huge effect and you didn't really need to expend that much energy.
Very, very true. And, you know, I have to thank you for normalizing some of my behaviors I've had over the years. People have just looked at me strangely when I say, oh, I love yard sales. I love going to thrift stores. You know, all these, they're cost savers, but, you know, not generating so much waste. In fact, I was in the Michael's Arts and Crafts store yesterday looking for some containers for a project that I'm working on. And I was standing there looking at the containers, and they were a reasonable price. And usually that's like first and foremost in my mind. But then all of a sudden, your book popped into my mind, and I thought, why am I not in the thrift store looking for perfectly good glass containers there that, you know, when I decorate them and do what I need to do with them, no one knows that they're not brand new. And, you know, I can reuse in such, you know, a wonderful way. So these ideas keep popping up. And, you know, I could go on and on with my inspirations. I mean, I make my own lotions and sprays and other personal care products. And I've, oh, my gosh, I'm such a fan of apple cider vinegar. You know,
yes.
That's a laugh when you say ACV. ACV, you're like Rachel Ray who says her EVOO, extra virgin olive oil. You've coined ACV is like amazing.
I totally agree, and I use it on everything, and my husband makes fun of me constantly, but there's so many applications to it. Like, I just can't get enough of it, so I'm glad that you're a fan, too.
Yes, I am. I've had people to look at me crazily when, you know, some food smokes up in the house, and I'll take a tea towel and wet it with apple cider vinegar, and I'll start spinning it around in the air.
taking up, you know, some of the smell, or I'll take a shot glass of it if I have
one.
Cramps.
Yeah, that's a
good one. And if I get a cramp, a muscle cramp, I'll take a shot glass of the vinegar, and my cramp tends to just go immediately away. And, you know, of course, there are cleaning and other applications, but thank you for the reminder of it and for the confirmation for me that I'm not crazy doing all this stuff.
And that's what we need. Like, that was the goal of the book, and I think I say it in the end of the book, is that my goal is just to keep recruiting people so that I look less crazy. Like, the more of us there are, the less crazy we are. Like, I get such strange looks when I show up to get a coffee and I've got, like, a jar instead of a travel mug, or, you know, when I go and I buy something and I say I don't want bags, and they just start bagging it automatically, and I'm like, no, I don't want bags, I don't want bags. Like, I always feel like I'm getting these crazy looks. So it's kind of a selfish thing, really. The more people I convert to this way of life, it's it makes me look a lot better.
Less craziness in numbers, right?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
I'm just recruiting.
Well, you have lots of recipes in the book, and, you know, I was just so happy because a few months ago I had a holistic veterinarian on the show, and having her on the show really encouraged me to think about, okay, what can I do to help the smell for my little dog, Chi, and to help his coat, et cetera, et cetera. We already have a homemade toothpaste for him and whatnot, but it's like, what else can we do? And what did you do? You went and you had a recipe for it, and I'm like, yes, yes, thank you.
So perfect.
So
I love it when that happens.
Yes, you had all of these wonderful recipes, and of course, I love essential oils, so I have plenty of them on hand, and I do classes with them, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, have oils, am ready to make all my various products. But from your perspective, what have you heard about which recipe has gotten the most reaction and why?
It is hands down the shampoo and conditioner one. And for anyone who hasn't read the book, I give a recipe for shampoo and conditioner, which is literally just a tablespoon of baking soda dissolved in a warm cup of water, and that's your shampoo rinse. And then 1 to 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar dissolved in water, of course, the apple cider vinegar, or you can use lemon juice. And so that's your conditioning rinse. And so, I mean, it's 2 ingredients for shampoo and conditioner. You use them separately. And it makes your hair so soft and shiny and manageable, and it's like the results that I would have had with some other stuff that I bought I spent ridiculous amount. You know how we are. Like, women are crazy about our hair, and nothing mm-hmm. seems too expensive to have good hair. And so this was something that I've gotten a ton of reaction on, because it seems so crazy. Like, it seems so strange that these 2 ingredients should actually work. But they do, and I've mm-hmm. had a ton of feedback from people who've tried it. I always just encourage people to try it, because for some people it mm-hmm. won't work, but for the majority of people I've heard from, it does. And, I mean, if you can simplify your shower routine from having, you know, 60 different chemical compounds that you're putting on your hair in your shampoo and conditioner to just 2 that you can find in your pantry and that are edible, I mean, that's just so incredible.
Yes, it is. And I had to raise my eyebrow, but then it couldn't be but so crazy. You know, I happen to have dreadlocks, and so mm-hmm. when I was first locking my hair, 2002 or so, I had to go a period of months in which I could not wash my hair. And
mm-hmm.
so I think we used Sea Breeze on my scalp. But, you know, I was thinking, wow, this could have been a solution back then to cleaning my hair without going in with a full shampoo and doing all of that to give it a chance
totally.
To do what it needed to do to lock.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. it would have just been rinsing through, and you wouldn't have needed to suds it or anything. You could have just done a rinse through. Yeah, that'd be interesting to hear from other people who have dreads and see if that actually works.
Right, yes. You know, I want to pause right here to see if we have callers who have a question for you. The number is 917-889-7806. Again, that is 917-889-7806. Please make sure you press 1. That lets me know you'd like to speak with the host, or at least our guest, Madeline Somerville, author of this wonderful book that I was up till 3 in the morning reading.
You're one of those too, hey? We do have a lot in common. Every night I'm
going
to bed early.
Mm-hmm. All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. I really do have to say that slowly.
I know, it's quite a mouthful.
Otherwise, I will trip all over it. Well, you know, Madeline, actually, I see a caller here, and I recognize this area code. I know this has got to be my mother. She likes to call in periodically.
Well, mine is probably listening, so this is appropriate.
Is she? Okay, hello. Is this Evelyn Parker on the line?
Hi there. I am enjoying listening and laughing at you young ladies.
Oh, okay.
I'm so glad.
That is so good. I'm going to have to share some of the recipes in the book with you, Mom. I know you will really, really appreciate them.
You know that. You know me pretty well, don't you?
Yes, and, you know, some other changes. I mean, oh, my goodness, so many suggestions.
Okay.
And so we'll definitely get working with that.
All right.
Well, thank you for listening in.
Yes.
Isn't it nice how our moms are our number one fans? It's like no matter how, where you go or what you do, your mom is like there, number one cheerleader.
Exactly. You know, I feel like Ellen DeGeneres, her mom was always calling in or on her show or whatnot. So it's always a privilege when my mom can call in and listen in to the show.
Yes.
It's been nice.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. Keep listening and see what you can pick up.
All right. A little while longer. You know my task, what I have to do.
I do. Okay. Talk to you later.
But I enjoy this so very much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. She is so precious. I love my mother to pieces. I really do.
When my book first came out, my mom went on to Amazon and reviewed it, and I was laughing so hard because I was like, Mom, you didn't even use a fake name. Like, you went on there, and it's, like, very clear that you're related to me. Like, and she's like, 5 stars. This was a fantastic book. I'm like, what else are you going to say, really? But she's always the first to comment on anything I post. She's always, like, right there. So it's nice to see.
So what do you find to be the most challenging aspect of green living and why?
I think especially these days with my daughter, it's the organization part of it. I mean, it's like you were saying, like you can be wandering around a store and you see something that you need and it's so easy to just buy it right there because it's there and it's right in front of you and you could just get it and be done with it and that thing would be checked off your list. And it sometimes takes a little bit more organization, a little bit more planning to make sure that you have, you know, a coffee jar before you leave the house or a water bottle or your reusable utensils and a disposable bag, like this whole sort of set that I have. I need to make sure that that's in my bag before I go out. I need to make sure that I have time to be doing secondhand shopping and thrift shopping so that, you know, usually it's in a separate area than, you know, your grocery stores or whatever else you'd be going to. And so it does take a little bit more preparation and a little bit more planning, but I find that once you start it's just beginning that's the hardest part. And after that, it's all, I mean, it just sort of becomes a habit.
Gotcha. Yes, yes. And, you know, I think, you know, anyone who has ever experienced a financial crisis where they've really had to tighten the belt, they can really appreciate, you know, using less. And realizing that, wow, all this stuff that we accumulate, we don't necessarily need. You know, I've had feng shui experts on the show, and we certainly don't need all of the clutter that we accumulate in our lives. But yet, you know, at least in this society, there is this tendency to just buy more, get, accumulate. as if we're feeding something that really needs to be fed by something on more of a spiritual level. That's just my personal opinion, and I'm full of them.
I think it's so true, though. I think that it's – I always take it back to the advertisers, because I have this thing with advertisements where if you sat down and you consciously watched a two-minute commercial break, every single commercial is telling you that you're not good enough for some reason. They're telling you that your clothes aren't clean enough, that your car is old, that you're not skinny enough, your hair is – like every single thing that they're selling you, they have to create a need for it. And oftentimes the way they do that is by pointing out something that's lacking in your life. So by taking in all this advertisement, you are just constantly ingesting this idea that you're not enough. And in order to fix that, you have to go out and buy things. But then you have too much stuff, so then you have to go out and buy more stuff to store your stuff, because like it's just this never-ending cycle. And I think the first step of that is really not to become, you know, a Luddite or Amish or just totally divorce yourself from society, because I like the society, I like living in it, but to try and really cut down the amount of advertising you take in. It does wonders for how much you feel like you need. It's amazing how much you don't need when you're not being told that you need all these things. So that's the first step, I think, because I agree, you're trying to feed something. And I don't think it's not that we're stupid sheep. I mean, there's millions and millions of dollars that go into these advertisements. They're very clever. It's not a fair fight between us and them. So I think you just have to kind of remove yourself from that conversation.
And that's a very good point. I do like to use the term sheeple. I read it there somewhere at one time. And it's true. We can just blindly follow these very creative, very brilliant advertisers. And so I've gotten into the habit of recording shows that I want to see. And then I fast forward through the commercials if I can, or otherwise if we're watching live as a family or whatnot, oftentimes we will like mute during the commercial. It's like, I don't want that influence in my life. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. I'm tired of the pop-ups that come up, you know, when I'm on the internet, except they're everywhere.
It's everywhere. And it's hard. I don't think you can really take yourself out from it altogether unless you're sort of living in a hut in the woods. But I think it is important to just even be conscious of it, and especially for kids.
Yes.
Marketing is so insidious when it's directed towards kids, and so I think that we have a huge responsibility to them as well to protect them from that.
I agree, and you have a section in the book on the holidays and how to go about it differently, and it's so funny because a couple of years back, or maybe a few years back, I had a show in which we had people to call in, to write in, and I was also offering suggestions on holiday gems, in which we could, you know, give gifts that empowered, that, you know, were meaningful, but were inexpensive or free. And so you offered some suggestions in the book, which were really good, and just really highlighted that, you know, this is a vulnerable time right now for parents, because children will see the advertisements, they will want, and you know, whatever a person may celebrate religiously or spiritually or culturally, you know, it's a major gift-giving time in various parts of the world. And this is a good time to just be conscious of how we are giving.
And it's a really good conversation to have, and I'm glad you brought it, like, it is very important, especially around when you're talking about kids, because it's so hard as a parent when your kid wants something so badly and they're looking at you with these eyes and, you know it would bring them so much joy. It's so hard to say no, and it feels really mean sometimes. Like, I had an incident like that just earlier today, and making her put that toy back on the shelf and leave it there sometimes feels really, really mean. But what I always remind myself is that this is the first step in distinguishing between wants and needs, and it's a really good opportunity to have that conversation to say, we don't need this, we have lots of toys at home, and, you know, explain to her why we're not getting it, and have her practice that kind of understanding. And she's pretty good now. She'll just say, like, she's two, and she's sort of gotten into the habit of just saying goodbye to the toys, and we leave them there. But also just focusing on giving experiences or gifts of time rather than tangible things. So rather than giving a child a toy that's like the must-have toy, which might be forgotten in a month, or it's going to be buried in the mountain of 15 other toys that they get, to maybe give them a pass to the zoo and you could take them and it'll be a special day with just the two of you. Or you could contribute to some sort of lessons for them, like swimming lessons or, you know, a sport, something like that. Contributing like that to their lives, something that enriches their lives and creates a memory rather than an object or a product, I think teaches a really, really important lesson. And those are the things I think that are remembered more. I mean, a kid is always going to remember that special day that he had with Uncle Brian when they got to go to the movies together, just the two of them. Whereas, I mean, you ask a kid 6 months after Christmas what Uncle so-and-so gave them and they have no idea. Like, it's just sort of lost in the chaos. So it's an interesting opportunity to force yourself to think out the box.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think about my nieces and nephews and what they've told me, what they remember over the years. It's never been any gift that I had ever purchased for them. It was always the experiences. I mean, I would put together these little coloring book packets on the various holidays throughout the winter season, and they would color and do puzzles, and I would teach them about Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, which they weren't familiar with at the time, and they would do some practices, and we would read, we would sing Christmas carols, and do all sorts of fun things, and that is what has stuck with them, not any single gift I have ever given them.
I think that, and it's so true, and it really multiplies. Like, when you get a product or you get an item as a gift, you open it, and there's excitement when you open it, and then the few times that you play with it, and then oftentimes it tends to be sort of lost or discarded. Whereas when you give an experience or you give something like that that was so thoughtfully put together, there's the excitement when you open it, and so say it's a pass to the museum or something like that. There's the excitement when you open it, and then there's the excitement of anticipating the day. Okay, we're going to pick the day. When are you free? We can go. Then there's the excitement of actually going, and then there's the memories of it. So it's just something that continues, and it draws out far longer than just that initial five-minute excitement when you open it.
Right. And, you know, I have to laugh. Even if someone decides to give a gift, you know, everyone comes at this at their own pace, and that's perfectly fine. You know, there are various degrees of eco-friendliness or moving towards being more green or making this planet more sustainable, et cetera, et cetera. And even if you use wrap again, and I have to laugh at my mom because my mother always carefully unwraps her gifts, and she folds them up. And, you know, we used to always make fun of her for that. But way back then, I mean, she has known this for years to reuse.
They always do. And, like, our grandmas knew and our moms knew. And I used to laugh at people like that, too. And I was like, this is so ridiculous. It's just wrapping paper. And now I am that person. Like, I see if I get a gift and goes with wrapping paper, I'm, like, almost more excited about the paper. And I'm, like, very carefully taking it apart. Like, that is part of the gift for me now. So it came full circle for me, too.
Exactly. And, you know, we would say, you know, I know my mom grew up in the Depression era. And other people I know and their family members, their parents grew up in the Depression era. And we would look at it in such a way, it's like, wow, you know, because they grew up in that time, they didn't have a lot. They may have a lack mentality. But really, now is the time we can kind of shift how we even view that. It's not an issue of feeling lack, but it's an issue of making a conscious, loving choice for our planet as a whole. And I really like looking at it like that much better.
Yeah, and that's I think, a very important point, because when you talk about having less, immediately you feel like it's deprivation, or that feeling like you're on a diet and you're in a grocery store and there's all this stuff that you can't eat. And that's definitely not the message behind it. The idea is not to do without, and it's not to live a very dull, bare, joyless existence where your children don't get any presence ever because it's bad for the environment. Like, that's not the goal at all.
Right, right.
The goal is just to be more conscious about it and to reach a point where you do realize that possessions aren't treats. They are responsibilities. And so everything that we bring into our home, we have a responsibility for, and that is everything from how hard we work to have to pay for them. So many of us are carrying incredible amounts of debt because we're buying things that we simply can't afford. And then we have the responsibility of providing a place for it in our home and maintaining it if it breaks, and then disposing of it, hopefully in a responsible way once it's used up or once we're sort of tired of it. So if you look at it like that and you look at possessions as a responsibility rather than a treat, not having so many of them is actually a source of freedom rather than deprivation. You know, you can imagine a life where you don't have so much clutter, a life where you don't have so much stuff, a life where you don't have so much debt because you can't pay for the stuff. And it looks a lot like freedom rather than like dieting or something.
Right, right, yes. You know, your book has some really interesting sections. I said I would get to the pet section and mention that because I just had a new family member added back in April. And so I love that you included things on how we can be more eco-friendly with our dogs, with our cats, and you gave some wonderful recipes and suggestions there. And then, because when you were writing the book, you were pregnant with your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a baby section.
I do. It was a very interesting time. It was sort of writing it while I was pregnant, and then until she was about 6 months old, I was sort of finishing it and finishing the writing and editing process. So that was interesting, but it was really helpful too, because that way I could actually genuinely speak to the experience of preparing for and having a baby and actually know that I was talking about stuff that I kind of knew about, rather than, you always wonder if your ideals are going to hold up, you know, sort of like as many ideas as you want, but there's nothing that humbles you like parenthood, and so much gets thrown out the window once you actually get into it. So it's been reassuring to see how much has been able to stick around since having her.
Well, I have to commend you for using cloth diapers. I have friends who made that choice some years ago when they first started having children, and I just always thought, oh my gosh, what a pain in the butt, and I can't even imagine doing that. But, you know, if you think about the dirty diapers and just all the things that we use, it's like, wow, you have these wonderful alternatives. I love the ideas for making your own wipes, for using the diapers, you know, just all sorts of things to create a wonderful environment for your baby and not having to go out and spend a fortune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can get so expensive, especially when you look at those. I mean, it seems like every parenting magazine or every mommy blog has this list of must-haves for the baby. I mean, it's incredible. You can spend thousands and thousands of dollars preparing for a baby if you read all these lists and got all the stuff. So, I mean, it can be kind of overwhelming when you look at it like that. But we just sort of approached it with the idea that stores would still exist after she was born. So if we needed something, we could go on Craigslist or search around, you know, a local used moms groups and find it then, rather than feeling like we needed to have everything right away. And it helped that we were in a really tiny house, so we just didn't have space for a lot of it. Like that, I mean, it just made some things just out of the question. So that was really helpful. And the cloth diapering thing, it's not for everybody, but it is, I mean, it's come so far from when people were doing it 50 or 60 years ago. And there's so many different options out there. And if you do choose to do it, it is fairly easy. I mean, I'm not going to lie, she's potty trained now. And like, I was very, very excited when that day came because I was like, my laundry has been cut in half. Like, I'm free. So, I mean, it is definitely some work. But, you know, in terms of the cost and in terms of the environmental impact, it is hugely, hugely helpful. But, I mean, don't beat yourself up about it if you're a new mom who can't do it or doesn't want to do it. I mean, that there are other options, too. But cloth diapering is definitely a good one for sure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, yes, you have wonderful, wonderful suggestions. And, you know, you mentioned your laundry has been cut in half. We were in the process of planning to make our own laundry detergent. So thank you for the very simple recipe that you included in the book for
that.
Yay. Making life so much easier. Thank you. And
well, I
grew
think
up.
It has...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think it has to be simple. Otherwise, you won't do it, right? I mean, some of the recipes
right.
I had found previously were like 10 ingredients, and they, you know, it was like this super expensive random ingredient you could only get from a health food store halfway across town. And I had made them, and they worked fine, but I just knew that I was never going to make them again. Like, it was just too much work to do it. But I think the simplicity of it, and I think all of the recipes have like 5 ingredients or less, and they're fairly easy to find, because that's the only way that they're going to be sustainable, is if they're easy, right?
Right. And you say stress-free simplicity in the subtitle of your book, and it is true. I was very surprised at how simple, and, you know, just being loving and gentle with myself, not beating up on myself for not knowing this stuff ahead of time or investigating it ahead of time to do it sooner. But now that I know, I am empowered and I can get started with it. So I'm just really, really a fan. I have to tell you that.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you're welcome. Not everything that you've tried worked initially. I mean, you had a lot of trial and error. And
yes.
In your book, you include several stories about your own eco-fails, as you call them. Like, this tickled me, your composting incident. Where you had you were throwing things in the freezer that you were going to compost. And then I cracked up laughing when you bought toasted sesame oil to use as moisturizer instead of plain sesame oil.
Yeah, don't do that. It's very stinky. It's like my poor husband was, like, sleeping next to a stir fry for a few months because I was like, I can't just waste
right.
it. What am I going to do with it? Like...
Right, right.
Sesame oil is a great moisturizer, but you don't need the toasted aspect of it. That was kind of an added bonus.
Right, right. Why did you feel it was important to include these eco-fail situations in the book?
For me, it was the same as including the part about being gentle to yourself. And I didn't want to come across, and I still don't want to come across as an expert. And that's why I'm always really careful to mention that I have no expertise. This is not my full-time job. I'm just a lady like any other lady who just happens to be doing this. And I think the important part behind that is that I'm not different than other people. Like, I don't have some special education that allows me to do this. This is something that anybody can do if they wanted to. And so I needed to include parts that I had screwed up, because guaranteed somebody is out there trying a recipe and missing an ingredient or missing a step and totally screwing up and then feeling like a total loser because they can't even manage this recipe. And I do that constantly. I've tried many things, and I'm still learning. I'm still trying many things, and some of them don't work. The ones that do, I sort of add into my routine, and the ones that don't, I laugh about and, you know, write on my blog for everybody else to laugh at me too. And then I move on from there. And so it was important for me to share that that happened to me too, because, I mean, of course it did, but without saying it, it just kind of seemed like it went without saying that I was this perfect eco guru when I'm totally not. And the husband thing was important because Adam is, I think, like many spouses or coworkers or friends or office mates, who he wasn't always 100% on board with everything that I wanted to try. And that wasn't something that I ever saw addressed in any eco-friendly book. It just seemed like, you know, you would come up with this idea and everyone around you would be like, yes, let's do it for the planet, and they'd be on board. And that wasn't my experience. Sometimes it took a lot of convincing. Sometimes, like the composting incident, it was like this marital tug of war back and forth, which we eventually resolved. But I would guess that a lot of people have that situation. I would guess that in most relationships, there's one person who's really gung-ho about it, and the other person is kind of like, we'll see, right? So I just wanted to address
right,
that
right.
and let people know that that's totally normal, and there's ways to get around that and to work with it too.
Well, you know, I have to say that I'm so blessed to have a partner who is pretty much on the same page with the eco-friendliness. You know, I think I'm a little bit more gung-ho in some ways, and especially when it comes to why do you need to turn the heat setting on the dishwasher? Or, you know the dryer doesn't work that well. Don't clog it up with too many heavy items. Let's hang it out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I am the one getting the benefit from her lotions and her mouthwash that she has
mm-hmm.
made. And she's going to be clutching bleach to her dying day, bless her heart, unless something shifts. But, you know, I'm always using my essential oils. And
there's got to be room for compromise somewhere,
good.
Right? Like, I don't think
yes.
anyone has ever walked
yes.
just for the joy of walking. So, I mean, there's always that
right.
little bit of a divide, and that's where you kind of have to be like, okay, you do you, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have to say, those were some of the most enjoyable parts of the book when, you know, you included aspects of your husband's and, you know, your relationship with your husband, and he has got to be a wonderful, wonderful husband, a good egg to to be open to, you know, he was such a, but he presented such wonderful examples, you know, such teachable moments.
It's never dull. Like, we are very opposite people. Like, we are the embodiment of opposites attract. And so he's always showing me different viewpoints. And sometimes that's very enlightening, and sometimes that's very irritating, but it's never boring.
Uh-huh. Well, it really is hilarious, this book, and reading it and reading the stories and your exploits with your husband, with baby Olive, now toddler Olive, the whole, I'll just say, that pooping scenario. People, you've got to read the book so that you can read it.
Me.
I'm not giving it away.
Poor girl.
You have to get the book to read it. Oh, my gosh. That was hilarious. I was like, please, no, no, no.
That's what I was thinking, too.
I'm sure. I'm quite sure. So if there were one thing that you would hope readers could take away from this book, what would it be?
I think I would encourage people to just find an exciting place to start, because that is the toughest part. If you're somebody who has not really gotten into this green living thing, but it's like lurking on your to-do list somewhere near the bottom, and you keep thinking, oh, yes, I keep meaning to go green. Yes, I know I need to do that. Find an exciting place to start, and everybody has one, and it'll totally mm-hmm. differ based on your personality, but, you know, get this book or get a different book or talk to your friends and find one aspect of eco-friendly living that excites you, and whether that's saving money or reusing things or gardening or preparing your own food or preparing your own body lotions. For me, I started with cleaning just because that, I don't know, I'm kind of strange that I loved it. I loved being able to make my own cleaning products. But find that place that excites you and start there, and then start really, really small. And so I know that it's really tempting when you're taking on a new project to want to whip through and be like, this is the new me. I'm an eco-friendly person now. I'm going to throw out all of my bleach and all of my plastic, and I'm, you know, going to buy all hemp from now on. And it's so tempting, and it comes from a good place. It comes from a really well-intentioned, enthusiastic place, but it can also, it burns you out, and it's kind of unsustainable. So if you find that place that you're excited to start, then just pick one thing, tackle one thing a week or one thing a month, however much you feel like you're able to take on. So, you know, if you wanted to start with cooking, maybe start by making your own salsa for a month instead of buying it. And then once you feel like you're in the habit of that, you don't need the recipe anymore, you're in your salsa groove, then move on to maybe growing a little herb garden or a salad garden or something like that. Like, just start really, really small, take baby steps, and wait for each thing to kind of take root before you take on something else. And it feels like that's just taking forever, but what it's actually doing is building sustainable habits. And so instead of overhauling your life and then burning out and feeling like you failed at everything and then going back to what you were doing. You're having small successes and you're building on them one at a time. And then each time you have a success, it makes you more excited to go forward and more excited to tackle something else. And that's how, I mean, that's the advice I give because that's how it happened for me. This has been, I mean, almost a six-year process, I think, of just trying little things one after the other and figuring out what works and what doesn't. So just find an exciting place to start and then take it slow from there.
Well, I will be interested in hearing from my different listeners as to, you know, where they are in the process. I know many of them are eco-friendly in a number of different ways, but, you know, what other shifts can folks make? Last month, I did a class called Creating a Signature Scent with Aromatherapy, and folks use the essential oils to make their own bath salts and lotion and spray mist. And, you know, that's one small start, you know, having some nice personal care products that you make yourself. You get such a sense of accomplishment. It's like, wow, I did this. I did this.
Yeah,
I did not have to go out and spend.
It's so empowering to make something. I mean, we don't do it enough. We don't make enough things. We're so separated from that process. So, I mean, I think way, way different than feeling like a chore. A lot of this stuff, exactly, is very empowering. It's very cool to step back and be like, I made that laundry detergent. Or like, you know, my baby is using lotion that I made. I know exactly what's in it. I know exactly when it was made and where it was produced and what it's packaged in. And I did that. It's so cool.
Yes. So for folks who want to follow up and purchase your book, where can they order?
Well, it's available at all of the big guys. It's on Amazon. I believe it's on Target, Barnes & Noble, and in Canada at Chapters and Indigo. And I really encourage people to go and see if they can find a local bookstore. Any local bookstore will be able to order this in for you, and you'll have so much more of an effect if you go to a local bookstore and support them rather than supporting one of the big box stores. And for people who feel kind of ridiculous buying something, talking about having less, there's also an audiobook version and there's a Kindle version if you don't want the physical thing. Because I know some people are like, this feels strange that I'm like buying another thing, talking about how to have less things. And I'm like, you don't have to have a thing. You can be open to the thing.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And the book is called All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. Hey, I said it faster that time, so
I'm
so proud.
It took me a while, too. I think now I've got it, but it was definitely, it took a while.
Wonderful. And also, you are a blogger up there in Canada. And so where can folks check out your blog?
Yes, I'm one of those. And my personal blog that is most updated is sweetmadeline.ca. And that's where I have a section on eco-friendly living and there's links to my book. But there's also more humiliating tales about my husband and stories about my dog and my daughter and just general life. And then I have a book blog as well that's more specifically attuned to, you know, giveaways and stuff having to do with the book, and that's at allyouneedislass.ca.
Okay, cool. And, you know, all this time I've been talking to you, and I've been calling you Madeline instead of Madeline, so I do apologize.
No, that's right. I, for some reason, always default to Sweet Madeline because it's like a play on the Sweet Caroline song, but it is Madeline. I think technically it's Yeah, it's the French Madeleine is the way it's spelled, but I've always been called everything from Madeline to Madeline to Madelini, so, I mean, I'll take anything.
And Maddie for short, maybe?
Yeah, I've always been Maddie for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you to whether it's Madeline Somerville, who has been on here talking about her wonderful book, My New Eco Bible, that's what I'm calling it, All You Need Is Less, The Eco-Friendly Guide to Guilt-Free Green Living and Stress-Free Simplicity. It's just been delightful talking with you, and we would like to invite our listeners to tune in again on the first and second Sunday in December at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On the first Sunday, we'll have readings galore and so much more, offering readings from three of our favorite intuitives, Coach Wilma Lee, intuitive spiritualist Tori C., and Om Boogie. That rhymes. I love that. And we'll also be offering other readings, meaning we're giving away wonderful books by authors who have guested on this show. But if you think you're getting my book from Madeline, you have another thought coming. I got to hold on to that for a while. I have plans for that book. I have work to do with the book. On the second Sunday, another author will be on as we talk about holistic pain relief with Dr. Heather Tick. And so I'm really looking forward to that as well. If folks want to contact me, Tanya Parker, they can email me, Tanya, T-O-N-Y-A, at mindbodyandspiritworks.com. For more information about my holistic healing, teaching, and writing services, including my blog, Mind, Body, and Soul Food Meanderings. If you want information on how to order my meditation CD, about upcoming Reiki trainings, aromatherapy workshops, and sacred events, et cetera, you can also check the website, which is mindbodyandspiritworks.com. We have an upcoming event that we want folks to save the date for, and that is on 12/13/14, December 13th. We'll be having a Mind, Body, and Soul Food Holiday Heal-a-thon and Sale in Silver Spring, Maryland, featuring gifted healers providing individual services for your relaxation, an array of vending items that will make wonderful holiday gifts, many of them handcrafted, Madeline, and we'll be having delicious homemade food. So definitely check that out. Feel free to connect with me on Facebook as Throat Chakra Shaman. Please like the Mind, Body, and Soul Food page there. And also, you can find me on Twitter as Fifth Chakra Shaman. I'm also on LinkedIn. And please like my show and follow me on Blog Talk Radio. So this evening, Madeline Somerville informed and inspired us toward more conscious and eco-friendly living. For leftovers, I'll leave you with some Mind, Body, and Soul Food to Go from Madeline herself in her book. She says, it is possible to take easy baby steps toward a more earth-friendly lifestyle without stress, guilt, or judgy eco-shaming. So, my beautiful listeners, may you step easily, effortlessly, elegantly, and ecologically until we next dine again at the Mind, Body, and Soul Food Table.
One, two, here I go.
Well, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Yeah, I'm a hungry woman. Feed me like I want to be fed. Well, you can feed